a lantern, but with a visible sphere of orange fire swirling within. I felt fortunate the fire spell had worked. If I'd seen the strange torch more clearly before I tried the plan, I would have assumed the glass would have blocked the spell. Upon closer examination, I found a piece of fiber. A wick, maybe? It led right into the enclosed glass. That meant the torches could probably be lit through mundane means, too. I hadn't actually brought any fire-starting supplies in my bag, but I'd have to think about that for next time. "You got enough mana to light the other torches?" I noted five more of them around the room. With some light available, I also turned off my attunement. Keeping it on was going to give me a headache, as well as drain my mana supply. Patrick grinned, looking visibly more confident now that we had a bit of light.
"Yep, I'll get started."
He walked over to the next one, put his hand over it, and repeated his incantation. A brief flicker of flame. The torch was lit, and the room went black. There was no bell to accompany this event. It was a hiss in the air, a sound of something being torn apart, followed by the growl of something bestial. At that point, I was no longer merely concerned. I'd made the leap straight to terrified. Something slammed into me with battering ram force. I flew backwards, smashing into the wall, my shield sigil absorbing as much of the impact as it could. I sunk to the floor.
"Corin?"
came Patrick's uncertain voice.
"Rushing, relight the other torch, now!"
I turned my attunement back on just before it hit me again, a clawed hand the size of my torso tossing me along the wall and sending me skidding across the floor.
"I can't see where it is!"
The beast was fast, nearly on top of me again before I had a chance to reply. It wasn't truly visible, even with my attunement active, more of a blur of disruption within the things I could see. From the blur of movement streaking toward me, I pictured a lion the size of a carriage trailing multiple spine-laced tails. I raised my demi-gauntlet and focused my will, pressing raw mana into the device. A sphere of gray mana flashed from my outstretched hand, blasting into my onrushing foe. The impact didn't stagger it much. I was using the attack function, not the knockback function, but it let out a roar of pain at the impact. The blast had also briefly illuminated the room enough for me to get a better look at what I was fighting. It wasn't a lion. It was utterly, horribly worse. It looked more like a horned panther with draconic scales the size of my fist. Each of the tails I'd seen before, a serpentine tendril that extended from the creature's spine. The tendrils moved independently, and several of them were raised above the creature's back, looking poised to strike like a snake. I wanted nothing to do with that thing, but it seemed to have a difference of opinion. Tendrils descended like spears from the sky. I focused again, sending mana into the other rune. There was a sharp burst of pain from using so much of my power in rapid succession, but the blast of kinetic energy that ripped out managed to knock the creature back a few steps, throwing the tendrils out of position. They ripped into the stone floor, and then it was dark again.
"Just throw a fireball at it! I'm under attack over here!" "Oh, goddess! Flames of... no..."
Something hit my left shoulder, a smaller impact than the claw had been. I heard a crack and felt a jolt of agony, letting out a roar of my own at the sensation. I twitched my head to the side just as something else whistled past, intersecting the space where it had been a moment before. Then there was light, a chime, and the creature retreated, passing right through the wall at my side. Patrick had relit the first torch he'd ignited. Now that we could see a little more clearly, I groaned and pushed myself into a sitting position. My left arm was numb, but the pain had largely faded. A glance didn't show any visible injuries. The shield sigil must have stopped it from piercing through me. Patrick rushed to my side.
"You all right?"
I rubbed at the arm. It wasn't just numb. It felt cold.
"I think so, but I might need to find a healer after this. Nothing urgent. Don't relight that other torch." "No kidding. What do you think that thing was?"
I tried to shrug, and that hurt. "Okay, no more moving that arm for a while." I started to push myself to my feet, and Patrick knelt down and helped haul me into a standing position without prompting. It was a little awkward, but I was grateful nonetheless.
Not sure. Something related to Bargenzi and behemoths, maybe, but of a shadow variety? The flames seem to scare it off. Light probably hurts it.
Patrick pointed at the wedge I'd seen with my attunement on.
This thing has some writing on it. Maybe that'll tell us.
He had better eyes than I did. I couldn't see any writing at that distance. We approached cautiously, but there were no other obvious monsters in evidence. As I got closer, I saw that my companion was right. The wedge was a stone tablet, floor to ceiling, with tiny letters etched into the surface near the middle. Said middle was slightly higher up than my head. With the low light in the distance, I had some trouble reading it, but I managed to piece it together over a minute or so. Six visages of Goddess C, the light of mortal destiny. Two to keep our bodies strong, a pair to keep our hearts from wrong, a final two to light the path and keep us from the goddess wrath. Each guides us in a different way, and for these gifts a toll we pay. Six visages of Goddess C, the light of mortal destiny. My face twitched as I noticed the grammatical and capitalization errors in the poem. Really? Goddess wrath? But I brushed the instinct aside as best I could. I'd need some time to think about the poem to sort out the relevant parts. In the meantime, I walked to the other side of the tablet, inspecting it and finding a second message. You will be devoured within the dark. I shivered. That was certainly more direct, but definitely not comforting. Okay, I looked at Patrick. You read all that?
Yeah, looks like we're supposed to give gifts to the visages.
I don't think it means literal gifts, I said. I'm guessing they're talking about those torch things, except, you know, they're not actually torches. Going to guess we need to light each torch in the appropriate way. Patrick nodded.
Different element for each, then? How do we know which element goes to each torch thing?
I almost tried to shrug again, but managed to abort the motion before I hurt myself this time.
Might not have to do them in any kind of order.
I didn't see any runes or symbols of specific visages on them, and we'd have to have been really lucky to get fire right on the first try if there is supposed to be a specific gift for each. We should look at them more carefully, but it more likely just means we have to do six different elements in any order.
I don't actually have spells for six elements, though, he reminded me.
Maybe gray counts. It might not even be different elements, anyway. Maybe it's just different spells. Let's take a closer look at the first one before we even try anything else, though. Also, I want to look around the room in general. I limped my way toward the lit torch, muscles sore from the impacts with the floor and walls. I frowned as soon as I noticed the tiny rune etched into the surface of the metal base. I didn't recognize it.
Well, there's a marking here. I pointed at it.
Patrick walked up next to me.
Never seen that before. One of your enchanter things?
Probably, but not one I'm familiar with. I've got a book, but it would take too long to look it up. I walked over to the next torch, squinting at the base. Another marking. A different one. Not good. This has a different rune. There probably is a specific element for each, or maybe a specific sequence we have to light them.
I could try hitting the next one with lightning and seeing if it works, Patrick offered.
I shook my head vehemently. I am not ready to face whatever that thing is again. Let's see if we can find another clue somewhere else in here. Drawing closer to the cage, I got a better look at the fountain and, more importantly, the gleaming object within. A silvery white key. That was obviously important. Could I get it out immediately? A blast from the knockback function on my demi-gauntlet might displace enough water to reveal the key. Then a second well-placed blast might knock it out. But I'd seen an aura between the bars. There was probably a shield on the whole thing. It was probably cage-shaped, so we could see the prize within. Maybe I could bust through the shield, but it didn't seem worth the mana to experiment. I found Patrick kneeling next to the box.
Kinda wanna know what's in here.
He picked up the box, which I wouldn't have done, and shook it, which I definitely wouldn't have done. I could hear something clinking around inside. please don't break that. My hand twitched as I envisioned a potion bottle cracking inside.
Oh, right, sorry.
He set it back down.
I don't see any openings. I could try to blast it open.
Let's save that approach for if we can't figure anything else out. I'm going to see if I can find glowing eyes in the far corner of the room. It may have been my imagination, but it felt like the whole room had gotten just a little bit darker.
Relight the torch, Patrick.
I took a step backward, nearly tripping over the box.
Hmm? Relight it!
I pointed my hand toward the glowing eyes, readying another attack. They narrowed slightly in response. I could see no sign of the creature's body within the darker corner, so I couldn't even be certain it was the same monster as before. Patrick moved back to the original torch, repeating his original incantation over it. There was a flicker of white, then the torch's glow returned to full strength. When I looked again, the eyes were gone. I drew in a sharp breath.
Okay, looks like those torches go out on their own after a while. How's your mana?
I'm still fine. I nodded and withdrew the bell from my pouch.
I'm going to swap out for a minute for Jin. He has some divination abilities. Have him look at the runes and the box.
You're leaving?
Patrick's expression sank.
You or Jin can swap out and bring me back in just as soon as you've picked up more info, I assured him. Keep your eyes on the walls, too, and be ready to kill that thing with fire. With that, I rang the bell. My stomach lurched as my vision went white. I was in a waiting room. There were two large couches. The older student who'd brought us in was lounging across one of them. Jin sat stoically on the other, hands folded in his lap. Odd. I'd expected him to swap places with me instantly, but I guess that wasn't how this worked. The female student sat up.
Oh, hey! You actually did the bell thing?
Huh?
Guess you're up then.
She pointed at Jin. Jin turned his head to look at me quizzically. I nodded a greeting to him.
Got some stuff in there that we need divination for. Feel free to switch back out for me after you identify things, but you can stay in there if you think you can solve it.
His mouth twisted as his eyes flicked from my face to my disarrayed uniform, lingering on my unresponsive arm.
You look like you got hit by a carriage.
He sounded irritated. I raised my good arm self-consciously, trying to smooth out a wrinkle with a gauntleted hand.
Yeah. Don't let the room get dark. Patrick will explain the rest.
The student supervising us pointed at the single door at the far side of the lounge.
That'll take you back to the entrance room. Then head toward the door his team went into when they started. You can ring the bell again if you need to.
Jin nodded, heading that way with haste. I sat down on the couch carefully, inspecting my arm now that I had sufficient light. No visible damage, but it still felt numb. I looked at the older student.
Why does my arm still feel weird?
I figured any illusory damage from in there would fade as soon as I got out.
You won't get any answers about the test from me, kid, she smirked.
I rubbed the arm, grimacing. Can I do whatever I want in here, at least? She tilted her head to the side.
Sure, I guess. You're technically still taking the test.
Okay, then. How can I game that? I didn't have any way of healing my arm. Even if I had conventional healing, I wasn't sure it would work on what was probably fake damage. If it was a mental effect, which seemed possible, I might be able to get rid of it if I had something designed for purging mind control, but I didn't have that either. Sleep might have fixed it, but I'd never been good at falling asleep on command. I settled for doing something I knew I could do. I started recharging my shield sigil. The process was relatively simple. I just touched the sigil and gradually pushed gray mana into it. As long as I was making contact with the device, it would accept the mana and slowly begin to recharge. I'd gone through the process enough times now that I could tell when it had reached capacity. A full recharge still took me a few minutes. Teft's ability to recharge the sigils in a few moments was pretty impressive. Most people, even experts, didn't have that kind of mana control. I was getting faster at it, but I had a long way before I reached Teft's level of proficiency. I was still in the process of recharging when Patrick appeared in front of me, on the floor. More alarmingly, he wasn't moving. I rushed to his side, kneeling and gingerly rolling him over. Unconscious.
It took me a moment to confirm that his chest was still rising and falling. I heard a laugh from the other couch.
Looks like you lost one.
I whipped my head up to glare at her.
What's wrong with him?
I demanded. She rolled her eyes. Relax, kid. He's just asleep. He'll wake up when the test is over. I let out a low growl, which actually drew an expression of concern from her. Reaching down with both arms, I lifted Patrick from the cold stone of the floor and set him down on the couch I'd vacated. I didn't realize that the numbness in my arm was gone until after I'd finished moving him. Anger had burned away the chill in my mind. I stomped my way toward the exit door.
"Where are you going?"
the other student asked.
"To finish this."
I pushed into the main room, then back to the door where I'd first entered the challenge. I didn't know what the rules were for re-entering when someone was knocked out, but she had said that I was still technically taking the test. I opened the door and saw the swirl of darkness within. This time, I was ready. The sound of muffled gunfire reached me before sight took hold. The room was moderately lit this time, three torches burning different colors on the walls. Jin was backpedaling rapidly, twin revolvers in his hands. The creature, now fully visible, lashed out at him with vicious speed, four tendrils striking downward with whip-like motions, piercing the floor as Jin jumped and fired his guns. Both shots hit home, joining other bullet holes in the creature's scaly hide. The wounds dripped green ichor that sizzled as it splattered against the room's floor. Jin had the creature's attention, but his attacks seemed to be having a minimal effect. It retracted the tendrils and lunged, jaws outstretched. Jin stepped to the side, brushing a corner of his coat into the creature's mouth. It snapped down on the cloth, fangs piercing into the uniform as Jin twisted and pressed a revolver against the top of its head, firing straight into the skull. The beast recoiled at the impact, tearing a ragged section out of Jin's coat and shaking its head as if to rid itself of an insect. Then it surged again, too close now for Jin to dodge. So he didn't. He kicked it in the face once, twice, and thrice before bringing his gun down to smash it in the face. By this point, I had my sword drawn, and I was slowly advancing. I really didn't want to get into melee range of that thing, but the sword was undoubtedly the most effective weapon in my possession. If bullets were barely slowing the thing down, I had little chance of killing it with the gauntlet or the cane sitting on my opposite hip. A tendril snapped forward, forcing Jin to duck to avoid being impaled, and the creature took that opportunity to ram him with its horns. Jin tried to shift to the right, but one of the horns caught him as the beast charged. I saw his barrier flicker into existence, then begin to splinter and crack as the creature pushed, slamming Jin into the wall. Jin gasped as the move knocked the air out of his lungs, then began pounding on the creature's head ineffectively with his weapons. I didn't know why he wasn't firing the guns, but I couldn't let this go on. The cracks spreading like spiderwebs across his barrier were a sign that it was at critical capacity. In a moment, he'd go from merely being crushed to having a 3-foot horn sticking through his chest. Unacceptable. I felt the wisps of frost gathering on my blade as I thrust it into the creature's side, aiming for where I hoped a heart might be. I wasn't exactly familiar with the anatomy of unidentifiable nightmare monsters, from the way it roared as the saber pierced through a soft spot between scales. I guessed I'd hit something important. It tried to turn toward me, and I pushed the weapon deeper, letting out a roar of my own as I shoved. A visible layer of frost expanded outward from the wound, spreading across the creature's flank. It spun, swept my legs out from under me with a claw, and then jumped backward as I hit the floor. And as I recovered, readying a gauntlet to block the next strike, it turned, and it ran, taking my sword with it as it passed through the wall. My eyes widened. I hadn't realized that was possible. Jin had recovered before I did, reaching down with a hand and helping me to my feet.
"Good timing," he observed.
His breaths had slowed to an almost normal rate.
"Patrick is dead. We solved the torch problem, but the creature came anyway."
"What's the solution?" I glanced at the torches. Only two of them remained lit, indicating one of them had gone out during the fight. They're in matched pairs. Doesn't matter which mana type you start with, but you need to light the match with the same type.
And we tried to light two non-matching ones with fire and failed the puzzle. That made sense.
Okay, so we've got two lit with, what is that, lightning?
The two lit torches had some kind of crackling energy floating within them. Jin nodded.
I do not know if we have enough distinct mana types for the two remaining pairs without Patrick. We had managed to ignite two pairs, but the creature ambushed him when he walked into the darkness to light the last.
Ugh. Did you try gray? He again nodded.
Doesn't work.
I frowned, thinking back to the poem. Two to keep our bodies strong. A pair to keep our hearts from wrong. A final two to light the path. Maybe the pairs had to be physical, mental, and, light? I wasn't really sure on that last one. It was worth trying.
I cautiously moved over to the nearest unlit torch and pressed my gauntlet against it.
Have you tried transference? No.
I activated the gauntlet, blasting the torch with raw kinetic force. The torch shook, cracks appearing on the surface of the glass.
Oops. And a flicker of light manifested within the orb. Success!
Looks like that one works. Do you know which one? Jin was pointing to the other side of the room when I turned to look at him. There was a torch back there, sure, but that wasn't what he was pointing at.
Eyes in the dark.
My sword was still lodged in the creature's side, the weapon's icy glow illuminating a patch of frost that was still slowly spreading across the monster's hide. I cracked my neck. It was time to get my sword back. I glanced at Jin.
You need a minute to reload?
I already did. That monster can make itself selectively incorporeal, though. If it sees me aiming, it'll just go incorporeal to avoid most of the hits.
Why wasn't it going incorporeal to get rid of the sword, then? Oh, maybe the weapon being stuck in it meant the creature's ability treated the saber as part of its own body. That explained how it managed to take the weapon out through the wall earlier.
I'll distract it.
Patrick said that too.
That's grim.
Well, it sounds like he did, at least for a minute.
I drew my dueling cane with my left hand. I wasn't as good at using it with my left, but I could manage, and the demigauntlet would interfere with using it in my right.
True, Jin admitted.
Going left, I stepped left and opened fire with the cane, feeling the sharp pull of mana through my hand. It was a familiar sensation, as invigorating as it was painful. Only half of my blasts landed. I'd expected a rush, but it started leaping in a zigzag pattern to avoid the assault, showing more intelligence than I expected. Spines descended from the air as it approached. I flicked the switch on the cane's hilt, sidestepped, and deflected the first spine with the blade. The creature hissed, the second spine missing me as it winced at the impact of a bullet against its side. I jumped over a sweeping claw, then danced back as it attempted to gore me, jamming my blade toward the bullet hole that Jin had put in its skull. I missed as it continued to move, losing my grip on the cane as it impacted an undamaged portion of the skull. The weapon went flying to the side, further gunshots piercing the creature's hide as it reared up on its hind legs.
I didn't like the look of that.
I was already jumping to the side when it slammed its feet down and breathed fire in a vast arc, blasting nearly a quarter of the room. Even outside the main arc of the flames, my barrier still visibly manifested to protect me from the rising heat. It was still spitting out the blast of incendiary breath when I rolled beneath it, grabbed the hilt of my sword, and pulled. The saber's blade was sharp, but I wasn't pulling at the right angle to make a good cut. I had something a little different in mind. Cracking some ice. I put my full weight into it as I pulled, feeling something give in the creature's side as the section of frozen hide began to break apart. The creature howled, dragging me along the floor as it rushed toward a wall, one of its massive legs landing on top of one of mine with a crunch. I slipped free, sword in hand, as a section of frozen hide gave way. The creature, still solid, slammed into the wall a few meters ahead of me. At last, it lay still. It was only in reflection afterward that I realized that I'd almost made the thing collapse on top of me, which would have brought a swift and uncomfortable end to my test. As it was, I couldn't feel my left leg, the one it had stomped on as it retreated. "Jin," I mumbled, a spark of cold surging through my leg. "Make sure it's dead." He walked over to me, reaching out a hand expectantly. Nearly incapacitated by the spreading feeling of numbness, it took me a moment before I understood what he wanted. "Oh, right." I flipped the sword around, offering him the hilt. He accepted it, walked over to the monster, and stabbed it a dozen times. "Dead," he pronounced, and walked back over. I breathed a sigh of relief, pushing myself into a seated position. "You going to get up?" he asked mildly. "I'm not sure I can. Things stepped on me while I was under it."
"That was a stupid move."
I nodded, wincing.
"Yeah, I guess so. Worked, though," he allowed. "And you gave me an idea."
He walked over to one of the last two unlit torches and swiped my sword into the globe. A moment later, the blue-white glow of frost manifested within the sphere. Jin smirked in satisfaction, moving to the last torch as I ineffectively massaged my leg. Another flick of the blade, Jin clearly knew how to handle the thing, and the last torch was lit. The cage in the center of the room rumbled and then lifted, an unseen hook pulling it until it contacted the ceiling. The cage remained in place, hovering over the statue, but there was sufficient room to access the things within it now. Jin walked over to me next.
"The pain is in your head. Shake it off."
Trying. The best I managed was to push myself into a crawl, getting me a little closer to the statue. "Anything in there aside from the key?" He shook his head.
"No."
He looked down at me, sighed, and laid the sword down on the floor.
"You are no good to me like this."
He reached into a pouch at his side, withdrawing a flask, and then handed it to me.
"Drink. It will heal you."
I didn't know if a healing potion would work on illusory damage, but it was probably worth trying. I opened the flask and took a drink. The liquid inside tasted foul, nothing like any healing potion I'd ever tried. I made a face. A whirring sensation started in my head as I handed the flask back to him. I felt weirdly warm in the aftermath, and the leg did feel a bit better.
"Thanks."
I fumbled to pick up my sword, sheathed it, and pushed myself to my feet. The numbness was still there, but it felt distant and weaker, so I managed to stumble my way over to the pool. I started to reach down to the water, but Jin slapped my hand away.
"Wait."
I turned, tilting my head at him in confusion. He tossed an expended bullet casing into the water. I watched as it disintegrated a moment later.
"Oh, not water."
"Well, that complicates things," I mumbled.
"Yes."
I considered my original plan of clearing some of the water with my gauntlet, but the key was at the bottom of the pool, and the water from the goddess's hands was flowing right on top of it. I drew my sword again.
"Might be able to freeze it. Good way to break your magic sword."
"You think the acid is that potent?" He shrugged.
"Just saying, I wouldn't risk losing a permanent magic item on an exam."
There was wisdom in that. I waved the sword close to the water without touching it, hoping the aura of frost would be sufficient to freeze the liquid, but nothing visible happened. I could feel the weapon's aura, though. Not the chill consequence of its presence. The aura itself felt tangible in my mind, much like how I could briefly feel the mana in my dueling cane before it was released. Why was that? I couldn't feel the power from my demi-gauntlet or shield sigil while they were inactive. Was it because the sword's aura was a passive effect and always on? Was it subtly drawing from my own mana at a rate too slow for me to detect, connecting me with the cold? I wouldn't know without further testing or research, but at the moment, that wasn't what was important. It gave me a new option. I leveled the tip of the blade, putting it an inch from the waterfall's edge, reached out into the aura, and shoved. Snap! The aura lashed out with a piercing thrust of rime that breached the waterfall. It left a blade-shaped wedge of ice frozen against the statue's surface, the still-flowing water above splashing against it and forcing me to step back to avoid the droplets. Now that was interesting.
Jin looked bemused. I was not aware you could do that.
New trick, I smirked. Time to get us a key. Take a few steps back.
He obliged. I swung the sword this time, feeling the aura whip along with the arc of the weapon. As the weapon traveled alongside the waterfall, I pushed again. The water froze as aura cut deeply into it, leaving a crescent-shaped platform to mark the blade's passage. The newly frozen section was more effective, but the water still struck the top of it and flowed across it into the pool below. Considering for a moment, I changed my approach, freezing water just where it appeared in the hands of the goddess next. The flow of water ceased. I thought I could hear the ice cracking in her hands, most likely the result of pressure building from water behind it. That meant I didn't have much time. I froze the water directly around the key next, took a step back, and blasted the section at an angle using my gauntlet's knockback function. The frozen key flew upward, just as I'd hoped, but fell back into the water before I could do anything about it. I had to repeat the process twice more until it flew entirely out of the pool. I heard the sound of something rumbling above me, blinking as I turned my head upward. Jin was faster, shoving me forward before the cage clattered to the floor with a cacophonous crash. Fortunately, both the key and I had landed outside. I pushed myself awkwardly to my feet. "Thanks," I said, turning back. Jin was inside the cage, looking unamused. Oops. All six torches were still lit, so relighting them to raise the cage wasn't an option. The key was still in a block of icy acid, and I didn't know how long it would take to melt. There didn't seem to be any keyholes on the cage, though, anyway.
"Any ideas on how we can get you out of there? Can you see the mechanism that raises and lowers it?"
He peered out through the bars. I looked up, but there was nothing visible. I turned my attunement on, but there was still nothing in the air. It was apparently raised and lowered through spells that were only active when they were in use. I shook my head at him, turning the attunement back off. My head swam for a moment as my sight returned to normal. I felt off somehow. I was probably overusing my mana. My right hand ached when I thought about it. Something else felt amiss too, though. I dismissed that line of thought as unimportant.
"Do you still have the return bell?"
I asked instead.
"Yeah,"
he cut himself off.
"Ah, I see. With Patrick incapacitated, how were you able to re-enter?"
"I just ran back to the door." He took out the bell and rang it, then vanished. The bell itself dropped as he teleported, clattering noisily on the floor. I picked it up. It took about a minute before he reappeared in the room.
"Patrick remains unconscious. There is no sign of the others," he reported.
"Good. Hope they're doing better than we are."
"Yes."
I handed the return bell back to Jin, and he accepted it wordlessly. The ice around the key hadn't melted. It occurred to me after a moment that I'd never seen the sword's ice melt naturally. In fact, it seemed to get worse over time. It couldn't last forever, could it? The only way I'd seen the ice disappear before was from flame magic.
"You wouldn't happen to have any fire spells, would you?"
Jin shook his head.
"I would not be able to tell you if I did."
Cryptic as usual, but not unexpected.
"But I do have fire-starting supplies."
Jin reached into his pouch, poured some of his healing potion on a rag, and then set the rag on the floor. He withdrew a knife and a dark-colored stone of some kind, striking the stone with the metal to make sparks. The rag ignited a moment later, and he picked it up on the knife's edge and then dropped it on top of the ice block. It took several seconds, but the ice melted enough to expose the key. Jin knelt down, carefully probing, and flicked the key with the edge of his knife. It flew out of the ice, skidding across the floor. I walked over, kneeling down, but paused before picking it up.
"Think the surface is still acidic?"
Jin nodded as he approached, pouring liquid from his flask over the key.
"Yes, but washing it will probably be sufficient. I would advise you to use the gauntlet to pick it up."
The inside of the gauntlet was only leather, but it was still a glove. Once the key had been washed, I picked it up. No obvious burning on the leather from contact. Good.
Okay. Now what do we do with this?
Jin pointed at the two doors.
There are two visible exits, both with locks matching the color of the key. Each door has an inscription. The box is also inscribed, but it has no visible opening.
I walked to the first door. In the greater lighting of all six torches, I could see words carved into the surface, much like on the tablet.
Only light can open the eyes of the faithless. I frowned, moving to the next door. Let fire purify the wicked.
I liked that message even less, but I turned to Jin.
So, fire room or light room next? He folded his hands in front of him, head slightly tilted.
You carry ice, which may prevail against fire, he mused.
But it's possible fire is the requirement for that room rather than what we'll face, I countered.
Possible, but I doubt it.
I nodded. His preference was obvious, and I didn't have a good argument to try the other room first. We didn't have any great sources of light or darkness, either. I turned the key in the lock. The stone door slid into the floor, reminiscent of some of the ones I'd seen in the tower. Nice touch. Lends authenticity.
The jet of fire that emerged from the doorway enveloped us both in an instant, crushing our shields to nothing. In a panicked instant, I reached out for the aura of the weapon at my side, spreading it across my skin. When the flames faded, I was shivering, my skin glistening with ice. When I turned, Jin was already gone.
Annihilated, I realized, my heart pounding.
Stay calm. It's just a simulation. He's fine. But this does mean I'm on my own now.
I stepped out of the doorway, not wanting to be caught by another errant blast of fire. From an angle, I could still see where the fire had come from. A statue of the creature we'd just fought stood directly across from the door. I could still feel the heat in the air and smell the acrid scent of the smoke it had left behind. And I could see the glow forming in its open mouth, flames swirling and forming. I stepped completely aside, watching as the blast flashed out the open door a moment later. It flooded the entrance for several seconds before receding again. I glanced back into the room. The creature's mouth was still open, a hint of flame already forming as it prepared another blast. Looking from side to side, I saw more statues. A dozen, at least, breathing their own blasts of flame at varying angles across the room. And even with only a moment to inspect, I could see gaps between those incinerating bursts of flame and a door on the opposite side of the room. I dodged back out of the way just as the next burst of flame leapt out the doorway. A timing puzzle. As the next flames receded, I was ready. I stepped in and to the left, swinging my head widely from side to side and confirming what I'd guessed while outside. There was a gap right here that no flaming breath would touch. There were, however, statues staring directly at the spaces to my left and right, as well as the area directly in front of me. In total, four statues on the opposite side of the room, two on the left, two on the right, and one at the far right corner on my side of the room turned at a diagonal. I winced, pressing against the wall as the next set of blasts seared the air at my right, then at my left a few moments later. That revealed another important factor. They weren't in sync. That was both good and bad. If the flames were dividing the room roughly into a grid, I could figure out where I could safely step and when. The diagonal-facing statue was going to be the hardest part. It breathed just after the flames near the center of the room let up. That meant crossing that area was going to be extremely difficult. My reflexes weren't bad, but I didn't trust my life to split-second timing. Even with the heat of the room, though, the aura of frost was numbing my skin dangerously, and that frost was real. And sadly, I didn't know of any way to diminish the cold without disabling it entirely. I pushed the frost aura away from myself, shivering in the aftermath. I couldn't risk causing myself real harm to shield myself from illusionary heat. Was there some other way I could use the frost?
I drew the sword, noticing for the first time how severely my hand was shaking. That was no good. I took the grip in both hands and swiped it in the air, pushing the aura outward as I'd done with the waterfall. A crescent-shaped blade of frost leapt from my swing, cresting through the air only to be melted by a blast of heat from one of the statues. I tried a second time, timing it with the blasts. This time I managed to hit a statue with the icy projectile, but the ice wave just cracked harmlessly across the statue's surface. Frowning, I sheathed the weapon. I watched the timing on the statues. Could I make the run? The diagonal statue had another property I hadn't picked up before. Every three times the statues breathed their flames, the diagonal statue skipped one. A chance. A deceptive chance. I realized one critical flaw in my plan before I pushed myself to act. Even if I rushed for the door, ducking between fountains of flame, I didn't have another key. Where was it? I found it hanging from a vicious-looking hook in the middle of the room, high enough that I could just barely reach it if I jumped. Maybe. It was, of course, right within a zone where the diagonal statue's flames would burn. I stared up at it, considering. In the distance, I heard the sound of a gong. Once, twice, and a third time. What was that supposed to mean? A time limit? I clenched and unclenched my hands, still shivering in spite of the flames licking the air around me. Okay, think. What's the best route to getting the key and getting across? Teleporting, obviously, but I can't do that. Or fly above the flames. Could I jump from statue to statue? I glanced at them, then shook my head. Nope, too far. Maybe I could have blasted myself forward with the kinetic energy from my gauntlet, but it wasn't made for transportation. That wasn't a reliable option. Maybe I could switch out and hope Marissa was outside. She could probably handle this, and the bell was lying on the ground where Jin had once been standing. That was kind of depressing, actually. Another gong sounded in the distance. Definitely a time limit, which meant gambling on Marissa solving this for me probably wasn't an option. Okay, doing this. I raised the demi-gauntlet, hand still shaking, and aimed at the key. I had to steady my right hand with the left before I fired. The first surge of mana missed. It was a small target. The second whipped the chain forward, hurling the key at exactly the angle I wanted, right off the hook and toward the exit door. As soon as the next jet of flames dissipated, I ran. Even moving at full speed, I barely made it to the next safe square on the grid before an incendiary blast singed the air behind me. Then I waited, as patient as I could be with blasts of fire raging all around me. There was a tiny voice in my head screaming all the while, "I don't want to die!" "It's not real," I told myself, but the terror whimpered again all the same. Another blast of flame. Another step forward, and then I was in the toughest spot. I waited for the diagonal flame breather to go through a full cycle just to be certain I knew when it would be off. I'd need to wait for the next flame to start right in front of me, rush into the diagonal statue's line of fire while it was inactive, and then wait an agonizing moment until the next one faded. Then I'd run. It seemed like a good plan. A clear plan. The flames leapt in front of me, then faded. This was the moment of truth. I rushed forward, finding that tiny safe spot, and waited in anguish, clenching my fists at the diagonal statue as it glared at me. It didn't breathe. I breathed deeply in response. The next flames erupted in front of me, just as I'd expected, and I waited until they faded. As soon as they did, I ran into the safety of the next square. Shivering and laughing with glee, I turned toward the diagonal statue, the danger that had passed, and saw that it was looking straight at me, a burning sphere forming in its mouth, seconds from activating. It had turned. The rushing statue turned! There were flames all around me. I had nowhere to dodge. Instinctively, I drew on the sword's power to shield me with frost. I knew it wouldn't be enough. I felt a jolt of unexpected agony as the flames washed over me and my senses faded to dust. Chapter 13. Liminal Phase. I was shivering when I woke. Idiot! The voice was harsh, barely familiar. As my vision cleared, I realized it wasn't one of my companions leaning over me. It was Professor Vellum. I kept shivering. My limbs were numb, but shot through with vines of agony. Vellum met my eyes.
Awake now? Good. Get rid of that sword!
I frowned, still disoriented. The sword? What did that have to do with anything? I was barely cognizant of the white aura stretched across my skin as I reached down, awkwardly fumbling with the hilt of my weapon, and half drew it from the scabbard. Turning over between convulsions, I barely managed to finish drawing it out of the sheath and shoving it to clatter across the stone floor. Vellum mumbled something I couldn't quite make out, and then snapped her fingers. I felt an abrupt shock as the white glow faded from my body. The numbness and pain didn't recede, but I was vaguely aware that the source of the cold that caused them had dissipated. The teacher turned to someone else.
Warm him!
I wanted to roll over to see who she was talking to, but I didn't have the strength. I heard a strong voice speaking an incantation as I slipped back into sleep.
Corin.
I was in a dense forest. A light rain falling from the darkened sky. I held a woman in my arms for the last time. She would shed no tears here. She had always been the stronger of us. I ran my fingers through her hair, stained turquoise by the vast power that flowed within her.
I will be with you soon. I will stop him this time.
I shivered as I spoke. We both knew that I had lied. She broke free from our embrace, turning her eyes up to meet mine. I'd seen so many things in those eyes. Laughter, anger, joy. I had never seen such complete despair.
I couldn't bear to meet that gaze.
I looked away, turning to the young man at my left side. His long hair was drenched, his legendary blade resting unsheathed against his right shoulder. He'd come such a long way from the boy I'd helped to raise. His skill had surpassed my own, though he would never admit it. Perhaps it would be enough. His gaze was filled with determination.
Take care of the rest of them while I'm away, I implored him.
Val nodded, turning his head toward my love.
Let's go, Rhea. The others are waiting.
She gripped my hand, squeezing it tightly for a moment before she followed Val deeper into the copse of trees that lay ahead.
Good.
I had worried she would refuse to leave me behind. I turned and faced the entrance to the glade. I did not have to wait long before he appeared. He was unarmored. He'd long ago reached the point where no hide or metal could match the toughness of his skin, and eschewing the ceremonial suit he wore on most occasions meant that he wanted every advantage he could employ. His eyes glimmered gold in the forest's low light. I shivered again as I saw the weapon sheathed at his side. The hilt resembled the base of a tree, a bright green gem clutched between its roots. As he drew the weapon, I observed the runes on the surface of the black metal blade. One rune for every life he had taken with it, whether they were man or god. There were countless thousands of runes on the surface of that blade. I set my hand on my own saber, drawing the familiar weapon and raising it in salute. I felt the familiar aura of frost stretch across my skin, hardening into armor. It was almost unbreakable. My opponent raised his own weapon to mirror my salute.
I have long anticipated this meeting.
My grip tightened on the hilt of my weapon, my heart hammering in my chest.
So have I.
My voice was as harsh as gravel from many years of shouting battlefield commands. I was an old man, but far younger than my rival in spite of appearances. His kind would never feel the weight of mortality on their bones.
Then let us begin.
My rival flashed forward in a blur, his blade forward in a deadly thrust. The world froze around me, raindrops pausing in their fall.
Corin, open your eyes!
I drifted backward, my perspective shifting as I saw the scene from above. I was no longer the old swordsman, simply a distant viewer from the skies above. I saw other figures below, the woman he loved among them, traversing the forest with haste. They headed toward a distant, shining light, something vast, something beyond my ability to perceive, contained within the form of a many-faceted gem.
Awaken!
The world around shivered and shattered, leaving only darkness.
Corin, wake up!
I felt someone squeeze my hand. I shivered, drawing in a sharp breath, and my eyes fluttered open. My vision cleared. My next breath was relief. It was Sarah that was holding my hand. I was in my own bed. I had no recollection of how I'd gotten there.
Oof, was all I managed to say.
Sarah was sitting in a chair beside me. She had deep bags under her eyes, like she hadn't slept in days. It was oddly dark in the room.
You were having some kind of nightmare.
She lifted something off my forehead, a wet towel, I realized belatedly. She replaced it with a new one. The details of the dream were already fading.
Not a nightmare,
I murmured.
Not exactly.
I wasn't exactly sure what it was, but I was fairly confident it wasn't a standard dream. I'd had plenty of adventure dreams before, but the voice that I'd heard, I recognized it. I'd only heard it once before. It was the same voice that had spoken to me when I'd gained my attunement. Certainly, the mind was capable of fabricating such things, but I didn't think so. The details of the encounter were lost to me in my waking state, but it didn't feel like the product of my ailing mind, nor even some sort of prophetic vision. It felt like a memory. But a memory of who? Selyse? The goddess of the towers? A possibility, but I didn't think so. Initially, at least, the vision seemed to come from the perspective of that old swordsman. I didn't recognize him. A previous wielder of the sword, perhaps? Lars had said that the sword, Selyse Lien, was cursed. I'd assumed he'd been spinning a tale to make a sale, but what if there had been some truth to it? I shivered, and not because of the cold. My eyes scanned the room.
"Where's the sword I was wearing?"
Sarah frowned.
"That's the first thing you're going to ask? Seriously?"
She retracted her hand from mine to cross her arms.
"It's under your bed.
Professor Vellum left strict instructions not to let you use it. You need to talk to her once you're recovered." Sitting up took significant effort. My back felt like someone had stuck a basket of needles in it. Sarah ruined my accomplishment immediately by pushing me back down with a firm hand.
"Stay! You're not going anywhere for a while."
From the pain that was building in my temples, I knew she was right. I lifted a hand to rub my forehead.
"What happened?" "A better question."
Normally she'd be smirking with a line like that, but not the slightest hint of mirth traced across her lips.
"You almost died."
I blinked. I almost died? That took a few moments to process.
How? Wasn't that just a simulation?
She wrinkled her nose.
"Yeah, and you still somehow managed to almost kill yourself. How typical."
When I didn't reply for a moment, she elaborated with an exasperated wave of her hand.
"You somehow managed to wreathe yourself in ice that spread on its own. Then you lost consciousness. You were lucky the tests are closely watched.
They pulled you out almost immediately. Thing is, the ice started spreading again as soon as they melted it off you. Vellum apparently woke you up long enough to get you to toss the sword aside, which stopped the effect from propagating further."
"Oh, is that what that was?"
Oops. She raised her arm. I flinched back, but the blow I'd expected never came. Instead, she slipped her arm under me and gave me a crushing hug, burying her head in my chest.
"Never do that again."
I felt my hands quiver at the unexpected contact. I wasn't used to being touched in a way that didn't involve violence, at least not in the last few years. It helped that it was Sarah.
I pictured when we'd held hands as children. It had been perfectly normal, even comforting, when we were little. I hadn't associated touching with pain back then. I took a deep breath and slowly returned the hug. I'm sorry that I worried you. I was surprised to find that I actually meant it. After 3 years away from everyone, I'd almost forgotten what it was like to have friends. I pulled her closer, feeling her tense, then relax at the gesture.
I'm okay,
I said. That part, unfortunately, was a lie. The next morning, I woke to find Sarah sleeping in the chair next to my bed. I wasn't sure what to make of that. I'd been raised to expect Sarah to be my retainer. Looking after me while I slept to make sure I didn't somehow manage to get myself killed? Classic retainer business. Now that she was presumably the family heir? Honestly, she'd have been better off if I had died. Less competition that way. I wouldn't have expected her to think in those terms, of course. As practical as Sarah could be, I never expected her to make a utility calculation about the value of my life. Was she actually thinking of me like a sibling now? I didn't know what to make of that. I missed Tristan. I missed him desperately, and I was still firm in my resolve that I'd find a way to get him back. And when he was back, we'd rebuild our family. He'd always been the unifying one, the one who was effortlessly charming and limitlessly talented. Mother and father had been so proud of him. But as much as I loved my brother, he'd never been the gentle sort. He wouldn't have been watching over me here. He'd have assumed that coddling me would have just encouraged future weakness. That was my father's philosophy, and we'd both been trained to believe it completely. I didn't start to have my doubts until after Tristan was gone. I was grateful that Sarah had never been raised with those values. Her eyes flickered open as I sat up, awkwardly dislodging my covers. I was feeling vastly better, but Sarah looked wretched. I doubted she'd gotten much sleep.
Hmm?
She mumbled.
What time is it?
I shrugged at her.
Don't know. It's Wednesday, though, unless I slept through more than one day.
You didn't.
Then you can sleep in. No classes to worry about.
She nodded blearily, and I pulled back the bed's covers and pointed a hand.
In.
Sarah grumbled as she shifted from chair to bed, and I helped pull off her boots. I wasn't going to let those filthy things into my sheets. I had standards. Next, I eased her into the covers. She mumbled something I couldn't hear, and then turned away. I saw the slightest crack of a smile on her face as she began to drift off. She was fast asleep in moments. Professor Vellum wasn't quite as friendly with her morning greeting. From her grimace when I walked into the office, I knew I was in for a lecture.
Ah, it's the prodigy of idiots.
I barely resisted the urge to roll my eyes.
And a good morning to you too, Professor. As always, your kind words bring warmth to my frigid heart.
She folded her arms.
Don't you snark at me, boy. There's only one seat for snark in this office, and I've had it claimed for quite some time.
I suppose a duel of wits for the chair is out of the question.
Vellum chortled.
Please, child. Have you ever heard the phrase, death of a thousand cuts? That's what the last fool who challenged me got, though the truth was that he could only comprehend one jab in those thousand. You wouldn't last a round.
Don't attribute to inability what more rightfully would be called disinterest. When the time comes for our contest, I won't need 1,000 strikes to match your own. A single one will suffice.
She laughed in earnest this time.
A bold claim!
She waved a hand as though she were clearing smoke and grew serious once more.
Though not amusing enough to make up for your little stunt in the test. Now sit your too clever rear. We have actual business to discuss.
Aw, but that was just getting entertaining. I lifted some books off one of the chairs across the desk from Vellum's, set them on the floor, and then took a seat. Belatedly, I noted the top book's title, Runes of Frost. Interesting.
So, nearly killed myself, I hear.
Vellum took her own seat.
I understand that your nonchalance is a way of deflecting from real concern, but I need you to take this seriously. Yes, you very nearly killed yourself. That is not a matter for jest.
A corner of my mouth turned downward, but I nodded. I understand, I told her.
I don't think you do.